Hey everybody, and welcome back to Serial Zombie Mom. Today I think what we're gonna do is kind of get away from the murder cases just a little bit and go into something that still has a lot of murder but is a bit of a myth and a legend in itself. Elizabeth Bathory, or the Blood Countess, as a lot of people know. Most who have heard about her or have known anything about her all attribute her to bathing in a tub of virgin blood. The blood of young girls, virgin girls, and that this is how she stayed young. Now, in reality, her story was much different. It wasn't as simple as having girls murdered, drained, and just bathing in their blood, okay? And that's the majority of what a lot of people hear. But even though this isn't really validated that this ever happened, you know, people can obviously embellish the stories. Now I'm going to get on to kind of who she really was. Now, Countess Elizabeth Bathory de Exide, or if we want to say it a little bit more proper to as far as how it was said, it was Ursabeth or Ursabet Bathory. Now, she was born August 7th of 1560 in the Kingdom of Hungary to Baron George Bathory. And the sixth, he was the sixth, and Baroness Anna Bathory. And she spent her childhood at the Exide Castle. Her uncle happened to be Andrew Bonaventura Bathory, the voivode of Transylvania. This made him pretty much the highest ranking official in Hungary at the time. In order to be that, he was appointed by the monarchy. Now, keep some of these little details in mind, because this is of Transylvania. When you think Transylvania, what is the first person you think of but a Dracula character? Keep some of that in mind as we go on, because there's going to be some similarities here. Now, she was descended from many different noble people, especially on her mother's side. So the way things work a lot of times with royal families, obviously, you marry within the family, you continue this bloodline, this royal bloodline that turns out to be pretty much an incestuous, just clusterfuck of mess, okay? But she had more of the royalty and nobility on her mother's side than her father's. Now, as a child, Elizabeth actually suffered from seizures. And it's believed that she, you know, from those accounts and reports from those days, you know, a doctor can look at it now and say, you know, they pretty much think that she had had some form of epilepsy. And again, this epilepsy was probably a side effect from her parents inbreeding on the royal lines. Now, this epilepsy was considered what they used to call falling sickness, and at the time was treated by rubbing the blood of someone who did not suffer from the ailment onto the lips of the sufferer. They would then give the epileptic a mix of non-sufferer's blood and a piece of skull as an episode ended. And when I say piece of skull, I'm not talking like a big chunk, like as in a bowl of of skull. It's more like a tiny, small piece of bone that they were, I believe, expected to ingest. Now, this may have some impact on her possible crimes later. And as we've already said, We've talked about Transylvania, just mentioned, you know, the possibility of it sounding a little bit like Dracula, and now all of a sudden she's putting blood on her lips to try and get through this epileptic shit. Okay. Now, it's also thought that she was taught to be cruel by her family, saying that she witnessed brutal punishments throughout her young life, including family members being involved in supposed witchcraft and supposed Satanism. Now, however, there's no real solid evidence to say that any of this is true. You know, you go a little more on the pagan side, people are going to use different forms of, you know, saying that people are using different forms of witchcraft, paganism, whatever. So as far as that's concerned, I mean, the Satanism, I can see that as black magic and them using this, that, you know, things were suspected, and it could just be that people were a little weird, a little dark, kind of like I'm just a little weird and a little dark. So, I mean, there's no real true solid evidence to any of this. Now, Bathory was raised as a Protestant. She was taught Latin, German, Hungarian, and Greek, and was allowed a pretty solid education due to her wealth and nobility. She also had a really prominent social rank, so everyone knew about her. They say at about 13 years of age, because they talk about how beautiful she was, that around 13 that she had actually given birth to a child fathered by a peasant boy, and supposedly given away to a local woman that was trusted by the family, and then sent off to live in Wallachia, which is a part of Romania. Now, this was all rumored until after her death, but apparently there's been evidence that validated the rumor. So at 13 years old, she was a mother. Now let's go back just a couple of years to the age of 10. At 10 years old, she had been promised to Count Ferenc Nadasi. He was considered a very high rank, and that it would have been a really good pairing for both of their families. You know, she was considered absolutely very beautiful and a very well-educated young woman, you know, and this pairing was more for political reasons. However, she and her future husband had some, you know, similar workings in their mind, okay? Now, her social standing was actually higher than her husband's, and therefore she kept the surname of Bathory. They married when she was 15 and he was 19. And they married on May 8th of 1575 with about 4,500 guests in attendance to the wedding. 4,500 people at a wedding. That's a big fucking wedding. That's like having a wedding in a stadium. It's fucking crazy. Now, her husband gifted her with the home of Castle of, and I can't even say it, it's C-S-E-J-T-E. I'm not even gonna try. So, it was his home. He offered it to her. That was their wedding gift. You know, he was like, this is what I can give you is this home. Now, 3 years into the marriage, in 1578, her husband becomes a soldier, chief commander in the Hungarian troops, and leads them to war against the Ottomans. Now, while he's away, she actually manages the business affairs, the estates, and has to provide, like, everyone, even with medical care. So she becomes essentially somewhat of a nurse, and financially provides all this for them. Now, during the Long War, she actually had to care of the defense of the estates, as the village had actually been plundered by the Ottomans already. Now, she eventually intervened on behalf of a destitute woman, and also a woman whose daughter was impregnated by rape. So, back in these 1500s, late 1500s, she was already fighting for women's rights at this point. So, it is said that not only her family was cruel, but that her husband also encouraged the behavior that was to come, as well as possibly engaging in the behavior a bit on his own. So, from this, I just want to say something really quickly about who she was, kind of what I think she was probably like. She was probably a feminist too early for her own time. She was fighting for women's rights. She wanted the women to be able to have a choice for things. She wanted to be able to make things easier on the women. She also was powerful. She controlled all of these finances. She controlled all the affairs. She took care of all this stuff. It didn't have to worry about a man to do it for her. So you have all of this. And then you have the taboos that I'm about to speak of, and how she and her husband had a lot of similarities. Now, with him being in and out of the war, you know, he's seen a lot of carnage. She has seen cruelty. And I imagine, you know, some people get off on that. Now, it's said that they had a very interesting and even BDSM sexual relationship, and that they entertained many desires and fulfilled each other's fantasies, even when it came to hurting people. Now, in 1585, she gives birth to a daughter, Anna, and later has Orsolia, I think, in 1590. So Anna was already 5 years old when she had this other child. And then she had Catalin in 1594, Andras in 1596, and Paul in 1958. Now, there is another that they could not verify as a child named Miklos, but he was listed in the will when she died. So it's pretty clear that there were other children. I do know that only a few of them lived into adulthood. I think 3 or 4 of all of the children. But there were a list of infants that had passed. But nothing really could be confirmed here, as she had a slew of governesses that cared for her children. So she, you know, regardless of how many children she had, she could have had 20, you know, not that she did, but she could have had 20 and only really knew about a few of them because the governesses just did the job and took care of the kids, you know. They did their job, she did hers. Now, when her husband died January 4th of 1604 at the age of 48, we are unsure what actually killed him, but it's said that he got sick in about 1601 and had debilitating pain in his legs, and that it permanently disabled him by 1603. So he was pretty much... I don't want to say a paraplegic or, you know, because we don't really know for sure what ailed him, but, he was not worth much of anything at that point. He was pretty much laying on his deathbed his final year. Now, they'd been married about 29 years before his death, and just before his passing, he trusted a man named Georgi Thurzo to care for the rest of his family, including Bathory. Now, this guy kind of acted like a step-in husband. Kind of like, you know, if anything happens to me, you've got to care to her. You've got to make sure she's okay. You've got to give her everything she needs, whatever it may be, you know, whatever. And I can see that to an extent. Now, between 1602 and 1604, rumors of her crimes had started to spread through the kingdom, as many had been complaining about her, speaking about the many missing young women in the area, and finally in 1610, King Matthias II has her investigated and has evidence collected from 52 witness statements, and by the following year, the number raised to over 300 witness statements. It is said that the majority of the murders were after her husband's death, as it may have been a way for her to grieve for her husband or take it out on everyone else while she mourned him. Now, according to the testimonies, the first victims were girls aged about 10 to 14 years of age. It says later that she would... Ooh, sorry, I had to yawn. Said later that she would start killing the daughters of lesser noble families. The families would actually send the daughters to her to learn proper court etiquette, so they could learn how to have better manners and eventually gain better husbands. But then the girls would never come home. Now, there would also be abductions where she'd get her victims. The people complained about her severe beatings, burning, mutilation of hands, biting the flesh off girls' faces, arms, and other body parts, and freezing or starving them to death. Now, she would even use needles to torture the girls, driving them into their fingers. Some would even have their noses or lips cut off, or whip them with stinging nettles. Now, if you know anything about nettles, you touch them and you're constantly, like, it's almost like you've got pox or you've got a horrible, horrible itchy rash. Like, you turn red and it's very uncomfortable. And so she would take those and continue to just beat them, which then caused the stinging and the burning and the pain. There are even accounts where the girls had been burned with hot tongs, and then the girls would be placed into freezing cold water. There would also be some that were covered in honey and covered in live ants, to where they were pretty much bitten up and eaten alive. And they were even cannibalized, where she would bite from their shoulders, their breasts, burn their flesh, including their genitals. And she was even careless enough to leave evidence of all of this, leaving traces of torture on bodies. And while some were buried in graveyards, a lot of them were left in unmarked locations. So, as I said, you know, it started with these young girls. Well, it would be servants. It would be peasants would send their daughters to go work for her to, you know, first of all, get them out of their house so they could feed their other family, you know, the rest of their family. And then the girls would learn, you know, the trade of being a maid and you know, whatever else, cook or cleaning or whatever she needed done. And they would learn these skills so that they could possibly go on to do more. Now, unfortunately, they'd go and she'd take these girls on, and then these girls would never come home to visit their families. Then, when she started getting bored with them because they were just dumb and stupid as she looked at them, because here they were peasants that didn't have an education, So it was too easy to fool some of these girls. Then she started having more people come in. You'd get the noble girls that wanted to learn the etiquette, like I said. You would get princesses and such that were coming to her for advice, and people who would say, you know, I want to learn this, what can you show me? And, oh, yeah, that's fine. Well, and I think initially everything started out of a kind heart. But then she realized, you know what? I need the blood for my epilepsy. I'm going to need this. Da-da-da-da-da. This is what they treated her with. Granted, we all know now that all that was just baloney. But now we know, you know, that there were other things they could have done to treat. But a lot of medicine was really naive back then. You're talking bloodletting. You're talking taking things like mercury and things like that for ailments. They didn't know what the hell they were doing, okay? Medicine, they didn't know shit about medicine. You know, it was just, oh, well, she's got a headache, bleed her. Oh, well, you know, she's got stomach pains, bleed her. You know, it was stupid. So here they thought, you know, oh, well, that person doesn't have it. Let's rub the blood from their body onto her lips. And so I believe at that point that it was, okay, well, you know, rubbing the blood on my lips isn't working anymore. So I need to start ingesting. Or I need to start soaking. Or I need to maybe even eat the flesh. Or maybe... So you've got to think, like, the doctors tell me I need to do what the doctors are telling me, but it's not working anymore, so let me do more of it. It's kind of like today with painkillers. The doctors gave me the painkillers. I've used them this long, now my body is used to it, it's not working, let me use more. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of reminiscence of some of the abuse that happens today. It's just in those days it was actual human blood being used as a medication. Okay. Now back to some of the torture. Now some of the girls would be scalded. Some would be dumped in icy water. Some would have both done, where they're burnt or scalded in hot water, and then thrown into icy water. Mm-hmm. So, it really just, it's a lot. There was a lot going on at the time. Now, some of the tortures suggest an intimate nature, and possibly even something sexual in nature. It could be a jealousy tactic, as she was aging and not considered as beautiful anymore. Which kind of brings us a reason to go back and look at fairy tales again. Like the Evil Queen in Snow White. I mean, who knows? I mean, as I said, a lot of those stories came from some truth. Now, December 12th of 1610, it was agreed that Bathory would be arrested along with some of her servants. They say that they found one dead girl and one imprisoned when they invaded to arrest her, but it was embellished to make it all believe that she was found red-handed or covered in blood, hence the idea of her soaking in a tub of blood. Now, it was decided, however, that since a trial and execution would have caused a huge scandal in the public eye, they decided to send her to a nunnery. But as more and more came out, they decided that would probably not be best and decided to just keep her under house arrest instead, so she would be imprisoned in her own home. And it also comes out that most witnesses actually never heard or saw anything firsthand, and that everything was pretty much hearsay. Two trials were held after her arrest, one on January 2nd and one on January 7th of 1611. On the 25th of that same year, And that same month, it was written that she would be confined to her castle for the rest of her life, where she would die at 54 years old. It was said that she was bricked into a room. But from written documents from a priest's visits, they state that she was able to actually move pretty freely throughout the castle. She just couldn't leave the castle. Now, she left all current and future inheritance to her children, signing her arrangement in 1614. And on August 20th of 1614, she complained that her hands were really cold, and she was told to go lie down, but found the following morning dead in her bed. Now, she was buried November 25th. Now, what did I say? August 20th. And she was buried November 25th. 3 fucking months after her death. Now, they don't know today where she was finally laid to rest. They had to actually move her grave a couple of times. Now, according to all accounts, Bathory actually earned the Guinness World Record for the most prolific female murderer, with a reputation of over 600 victims. Now, you can't think. I mean, maybe it's possible that she killed over 600, but when you look back in history, and people have done it in the last so many years, there's a good possibility that if she killed any, there were certainly not 600 victims, because that many people going missing would have made the history books even more so. You know, like, people would be able to see that going back into census records and birth and death records and things like that, publications, you know, whatever. And we're not finding a lot of that. So I'm thinking, and maybe I better not. Maybe I better not. I think if she killed, it was definitely not that many, that it was probably just a handful. Now, it is said that Elizabeth herself listed 650 victims in her papers. However, the number varied, and the exact number is not known. She then was referred to as the Blood Countess, as I mentioned at the start of the episode. And she may have actually been the true inspiration, or a partial inspiration, for Bram Stoker's Dracula. Along with, of course, Vlad Kepish, or Vlad the Impaler. Which, I'll get to that guy on another episode, because he was pretty crazy. Maybe the two of them together, whew. Yeah. I mean, he's pretty bad himself. So, as mentioned, they said that she would bathe in the blood of her victims, specifically virgin blood, to recapture her lost youth. But this isn't backed up as much as many other depictions of her. These stories actually started over 100 years after her death. However, if you read about Madame Lawlery in New Orleans, and you will discuss that on another episode, she did actually use a tincture of blood as a skincare regimen. A lot of places in history have used blood as a skincare regimen. And the younger the blood, yes, the better the skin would look. I mean, we're seeing that now today in Hollywood with the blood facials, where they take some of your blood and they actually create a facial. It's fucking crazy. And then don't get me started on the adrenochrome shit that people use for anti-wrinkle and whatever. Because that, I mean, it's human foreskin. And that's been going on for many, many years. But that's what the celebrities use. But I don't want to get on that conspiracy, because I could go on and on and on about these conspiracies of politics and Hollywood and all that junk, and I don't want to fight with that. But anyway, now there is a theory, however, that a lot of people are starting to come out of the woodwork and say that they agree with. This theory states she never committed any crime other than lending money to the crown. Because apparently her and her family were more well-to-do than even the king at the time. Now, the crown didn't want to owe any debt or have to pay it back. So they came up with this crazy story to make her crazy, to make her into a criminal. Now, here's where I say there was the possibility that, yes, maybe she did have a few that she murdered, you know, or maybe that died at the hands of her bloodletting so that she could treat her epilepsy. Maybe there was some torture. Maybe there was some BDSM weird shit that got out of hand, you know, maybe. But it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of up in the air. There's a few different things that fight this. I mean, because obviously the king is not going to put that into record that he owes, at least not a major record that it, you know, or it probably was a record that was destroyed. So now in 1602, there was a letter that was written by a priest talking about the cruelty that she and her husband had shown to the servants and others in the castle, especially to those of lower class. Now, had all the victims been peasants, she probably never would have seen a charge. However, since the victims were said to include noble-blooded young women, this is why she was punished. Because back then, they didn't give a shit about the peasants. They just didn't. But when people of noble standing, and people of noble standing who were betrothed to others for business arrangements or political arrangements or whatever, it ruined those plans when these girls didn't come back. Now, it is also said that there were other theories behind this, as to what actually happened with a lot of these young girls. Now, that's where I have my own theory that maybe she wasn't so bad. Maybe she was all for, you know, women doing whatever the hell they wanted. And she did what she felt she needed to do to help these girls. Why were all these noble girls coming to her? Yes, for etiquette. How to be better, whatever. Well, how many of them do you think that she probably snuck off so that they could avoid being married off? What if she was actually helping a lot of these girls? What if she actually took a lot of these girls and said, you know, oh yeah, they're dead, when really she was helping them evade horrible lifestyles. Younger girls, you know, avoiding sexual abuse from family members, their parents, you know, from or beatings or whatever. Was she cruel? You know, from all accounts, everything that we can find, yeah, she may have been. But I still don't see her as fighting for women's rights, fighting to help a young girl that was impregnated by rape, fighting to help that, and then going to torture these girls. I think she had a sexual, twisted, you know, BDSM, sadomasochistic style. I think her and her husband both got off on it. But as far as seeking these girls out just to torture them, I don't think so. I think that there was more to it. Either that or maybe they forced the girls into some of the stuff and they were going to tell and they had to off them. I mean, there's really, truly no telling. Because, you know, records back then were just were just that. It was basic records. They weren't going to go into detail like we do today with, you know, social media and everything's videotaped and recorded. And, you know, they couldn't do it to this extent. That's why when we look back in history, things don't look like they were as bad as they are today, when really the same shit was going on back then than is going on today. It's just everything today is more normalized. Everything is being normalized. Basic things are being drawn out of proportion. Like, one small thing is turning into a you know, it's making a mountain out of a molehill. But what do we do to fix it? We need to live simpler. We need to stop. I'm going to get on a rant and I'm going to stop because my rants can go on and on and on. It's awful. So, and I've been ranting the last couple of days and I don't think I need to continue doing it on my platform here. So, anyway, if there's any other information that anybody has of Elizabeth Bathory and would like me to add this to the episode, anything to, any of these theories that anybody knows about, any of your thoughts, email me at serialzombiemoms@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to add them onto the episode or even do a follow-up episode. So hit me up on Facebook, in the Facebook group or on Instagram, and I will, see you on the next one. Thanks a lot, guys.